global crickets. I'm really quite astonished. Interrupting the current neo-coronial cricketism to bring you behind the woodshed, this is Cricketude Busting Episode BTWRLM 393. Ongoing, folks. I just look around. I just am blown away. I'm blown away. People would rather do lots of other things and just focus their time on doing what they really ought to if the lockdown, the controls, the theft of everyone's property and freedom and rights was important. I would have really thought people would have started to focus their attention at least this many months out. And in particular, with my view that I've been talking about how to go about doing that before it got started, and then to be confirmed in it was right around March, where we identified there was no test, and when you went and looked around all your laws, wherever the rule of law and democracy brand of oppression resides, there was rules that said that they were supposed to find the infectious agent, and they didn't, and nobody stepped up and argued with that. It's fascinating. At any rate, so it's going to continue, folks, and it's going to get worse, and I've got a couple of things to point out to you. There's people coming now to tell you more of what's underneath it. What I talk about on the surface is really not to get buried in all that, which is already known. Really, we need to respond to it now. People have to be convinced of that, I suppose. Maybe I don't even know what it's going to take to convince you all. I guess you're more really willing to live underneath the oppression than respond to it. I really don't know. It's not as obvious as someone coming busting in your door and you got to defend yourself or your family. In a way, I wish it was, because I think we would get more action, but it's not happening that way. And so it's, we're watching winter come on and the storm's coming on. You're going to have to turn this around. You be what nature is. You be the storm against the oppression. Otherwise, these miscreants are going to get away with it. And they're going to get away with it as they transition you through, transform you. They're doing it right now. It's happening. As I said last week, it's not a reset. This is a transformation. This is not like resetting something and we're going to try it over. No, they've been transforming you. It's already in your mind. It's why you're probably not responding like you should. I know you don't believe that, but you believe what you're doing is fine. You believe that you can, like I say, protest. It means nothing to these people. They're going to continue their decisions because you haven't come as a main force to stop it. And I told you that the Virginia so-called sanctuary counties condition was really, that was the diversion. I showed you what you should have done and what you were to do, and I told you this is probably a setup to tell us what's coming and how we're supposed to respond. Is that response we were supposed to make? I see everyone saying, someone's going to have to stand up. Folks, each one of you has to stand up. That someone is supposed to be you. That's how this place was made. Not my rule, the way it was set up. You have the republic if you keep it. You have your rights if you assert them. You have the remedies if you assert them and then make sure that the oppressor and occupier doesn't steal them. In fact, that's the last one. I'm delayed again responding to emails. I've been so focused on some important procedural conditions that I'm trying to make sure we stay ahead of a problem, a potential problem. Again, I'm always researching on things we probably never need, but if it ever happens, I end up being the only one with a response. And that's where I work. I work in things of the possibilities and probabilities. And it seems to be that when you do that, you tend to warn off anybody who wants to come the unlawful way out front, but you also are more prepared. And I know it takes a little more work, but that's just you in having the responsibility in yourself to stop this thing. Not anyone stops this. Everyone stops this for each one of you. And I've given you plenty of evidence, plenty of methods to approach it however you feel comfortable. We're a fallen society over and over. It's just astonishing to me. Actually, I don't know what to think about anymore. Some of the comments, I get to see some of them. I don't get notices, so anybody who I don't respond to, it's not a slight or anything. I just don't even see them. But what I did want to revisit on BitChute, Walrus, thank you for doing your mirrors and your reposts. I appreciate that. That's a couple more people to watch. Actually, embarrassingly, you get more views over BitChute on your account than I do over here at RLM's YouTube. So I appreciate everybody that can, I don't know if you call it mirroring or just reposting it. wherever you do that, I appreciate it. Every few eyes just might be the next eyes that steps up. If none of you will, somebody might. We have someone who has, and that's, I'm focusing a lot of my attention into that area. Tornish Shaman makes a comment. But before I get to that, Estrella, thank you for commenting. I hadn't heard from you for a while. Appreciate that you're still there. You said my video has been heavily censored. Now cannot even understand what you're talking about, and it has been chopped so much. I don't know. There's plenty of places to find it. I don't know if BitChute's chopping anything, and I don't know if this is an audio player thing. So if you could get back with me, maybe we could work out where it is we're being chopped and why might that be happening. There's two or three different ways the broadcast gets out. The syndicators will pick up what they will, and if I have a technical difficulty, and they'll pick that up too, so that might happen. But if everybody's picking up the post-production that I produce with the ending on the broadcast, and a lot of some of the nonsense, noises, pauses, and then I try to compress all that down. If you're not getting the full meal deal behind which it, look for another place, and we're going to try and work out what that is. It could be that we're being censored. It also could be technical. As I found out this last week, I told you I was almost not going to, I didn't know if I was going to be up if my UPS has died. Boy, that ended up being even though it wasn't the UPS, it was quite an expensive, it would have been expensive if I had the money, but I just enough that I could cover the problem on that. We haven't had a technical difficulty that way, and to this week we should be okay. So moving on now to Tornish Shaman, Andrea, thank you for commenting and letting me know you're still all there and moving along. Tornish Shaman, have a question. The question is, how can certain entities be forced to prove the existence of CV-19 in a court of law? If it's fake, they're not going to prove it. How to bring CV-19 to court where it will have to prove it exists? Remember, the courts cost dollars more than most have. When faced with the cost, most capitulate, which is one reason revolutions occur. And that dynamic is a potential, but Tornish Shaman, please, I've been talking about how to do it and how to do it, get in for very little, first of all. Secondly, we look at this a little bit wrong. You need to listen very carefully, not that you don't, Tornish Shaman. I'm saying people really need to understand the subtlety with which I'm presenting what I do, what I say, how I've perceived how this works. You don't make them prove anything. I mean, you don't get them to prove it. You have to find the duty where they fail to prove it causes the liability. You have to find the duty and obligation to prove it before they can act that they failed. You don't worry about them proving it. You actually take the failure of the absence of the proof, the evidence, to catch them. When they don't, where there's a statute that said they had to, that's where you step in. That's the first error that they use, not the error, but they're supposed to use the color of that. They're using the color of that performance in order to pick up the prerogative power of the state. So this is not that you force them to prove. You just go to the statute that says they were supposed to prove, and the failure is their liability. So as long as they don't prove, they're in liability. And I want, again, I've said this a few weeks now. Now that it's been posted, you go to the Tulis report, just put in Tulis report, and you'll find the Tulis report site and go look for, he's putting it forward. He's got his complaint up. And I've said, for those of you that don't have a lot of money, but you want to make the judicial approach, go through the habeas corpus. A lot of states, one state I read, it was free. Some are $25, some are $50. If you don't have money, there's an informa pauperis. You can sign a waiver, you have to do some information, give it out that you don't have any money, and then they can't keep justice from you. And so there's a ways to get at this, and for those in the habeas, I've already talked about this, use the first 8 pages with those facts that are for David Tulis, change them over for your facts and your respondents. And you put that in a habeas and you challenge the unwarranted restraint of your liberty. That's the fastest and cheapest thing that I've been talking about since March. And so there's a, it's, you gotta, so the essential thing here is people don't listen very carefully, I don't think, to me. You're not, and so you set your mind up in a false belief. You're not forcing someone who doesn't want to cough up the bone out of their throat. You're not forcing them, having to break through their jaw to get the bone that's in their throat. You go to the statute that says they had the duty before they put the bone in that they wanted to swallow. They had to be able to make sure that the bone was there. So you don't even know the bone's in there. And so the statute requires notice of that it is there. That's the whole point about the Republican form of representative government and due process with notice. They have to prove they've got something they want to swallow that somehow is their super pill. And if they haven't, they don't get the power. It's pretty straightforward. There's only one statute that I know of for this condition, and it's in every state so far. It's in every country that has the brand of professions union, bar association, rule of law and democracy. They require the same things. Every jurisdiction has failed. That was the linchpin for all this. There's no linchpin. It just doesn't exist. They're pulling a bunch of, you got on a cart that has no horses on it, and you're bobbing your head like you're going down a road. The cart's not going anywhere. You think it's going somewhere. It's because we do this to ourselves. We think we have to force them to prove something, and they don't want to prove it. And they say, well, how do you force them to prove it? It's impossible. Well, yeah, it's impossible. So I thought about this long and hard for many years. How do you force the impossible? Well, you don't do it that way. It's a Gordian knot. You don't try to untie the knot. You just slip the bar out. There's no knot. You go to the statute that says they had to prove evidence before they got the power. They got the power without the evidence. That's a crime. And if they affect you in your rights, that's coercion. If it's in your property, that's extortion. Those are felonies. The omission or the commission of. This is not that big a deal here, actually, when you get at the focus of it. You're not forcing them to cough up a proof. You're showing the duty was on them by the code. The limited form of government said before you can act, you have to have evidence. You look and you see, and this is why the first thing that David Tulis did was send a letter demanding evidence. He didn't ask questions of them. He just said, where's the evidence you've complied with this statute? And when they came back with a dumb answer, they came back with their PCRs, and they came back with whatever they were hiding. They couldn't even produce a document of the first report that's required to start the thing because they claimed it was a redaction. They couldn't redact because they couldn't tell the personal names. They couldn't redact. They didn't produce the evidence. So it's not our job to produce the evidence when it's on an official. It's their job. It's their burden. It's their liability. It's their obligation and duty. And so we don't force them to prove. If they don't prove and the statute says they were to prove, you have the fault. It's right there. So this is a real serious problem in the way we perceive. I see lots of people doing this to themselves. Part of it's an unfamiliarity that the statutes are there. They really are there if you look in the objective basis. The occupier hasn't done it so wrong to make it look that bad. And I would have never really appreciated this until I got into the mining law and I got into beyond being a miner, being someone who extracts and produces, a producer, having a grant of disposal. I would have never really quite appreciated this until we identified how they were protecting that through these things called savings clauses, savings provisions. They may be 3 to 5 words in a full statute. All your rights are sitting in a 3 to 5 words if you know where to look for it. The savings provision for tyranny underneath health crisis was that the government had to identify the health crisis, the literal contagion, the active agent. No jurisdiction across the world has done that. You're not going to have to force them to prove it before liability. When they acted without it, you've got them in liability. Their only answer is to make the proof. And if they don't, they're done. It's really fast. Now, what stops that is potentially a corrupt court system. And I have a balancing act that you do when you walk in there. And that's why you're going to watch in the David Tullis complaint, there's a challenge to that condition. There's a different level of engagement here that I'm talking that I don't want to spread around. You got to understand why that's there. Otherwise, just go in through a habeas, find the statute. Everyone has a statute that said they were supposed to identify an infectious agent for this thing that they've got you locked down for. I don't know of anywhere that they certified any place. No one that's contacting me has identified it. In fact, they're finding the very same thing. So they have failed. Before they could wield the scepter of destruction and pummel everybody, they had to have a right to do that. To get that right, they had to identify an infectious agent, a source of contagion. And if they couldn't, they don't. When they acted beyond, they became criminals. It's treason. I don't even know the level of harm here. The level of crime is so high, I don't even know what to call it anymore. So, maybe I went way too long here, because it's really, stop thinking you have to make them prove something when the law was their first notice that before they could act, they had to have evidence of it. The lack of evidence of that is their liability. The corruption in the system, that's a different issue. There's different ways to try and deal with that. But if you don't step up and at least show that there's no foundation for the authority that they wield, you have no claim. You have no cause. And then even then, that complaint's not good enough until you can show it's harmed you. And this is kind of where my problem was. I'm so configured, there's not much that has harmed me. And so I don't know, I don't have a harm. I don't know what to say. There's just not a harm. Other people have, though, and so I've been trying to help those people. And when they go to make that harm, it's not quite so easy. You have to really think about how this inert thing has actually harmed you. And the only thing I can get at is that there was a man or a woman that took an office or employment that then took on the liability of the statute, the code, the rule, the law, whatever it is, they took that on. And it required a certain type of thing. When they failed and they acted without the qualifying position, they are now in a liability. Whether or not you get them for the liability is really irrelevant, more than if you go to a habeas corpus, you just relieve the unwarranted restraint on that liberty. Not because, like I just saw, I just read the Ohio case, they concede that COVID-19 it's indisputable that there's a problem. No, you don't do that. See, that's every case is doing that. I'm not going to, as I say, Ohio. I thought it was a good case because they brought up the idea that there was no isolate, but we have a problem with that case, and I'm not so enamored with it. That case has the same problems that every other case has. But anyway, so I don't know what to say. I've been saying this for a long time. No one seems to be picking it up. I'm not sure what to do about that. Those that want help, I've been trying to do my best. One court case looks like it's making the right discussion. It's not an argument. It's the failure. It's identifying it. One statute, that's the one I'm starting to focus a lot of time and energy to see and follow and again, try to make sure that we're back on now onto the corruption on that case. So that's a different approach. You just got to make sure you're vigilant on your rights and make sure that they're not going to get away with much. But that's a different insight. This one, I'm just trying to get people, I mean, even if you're habeas, you want to put a habeas card, just learn how to do that, advance that. It's an unwarranted restraint where they can't prove, where they don't prove the infectious agent. You don't have to have forced them to prove it. They just haven't. And therefore, they have no right to, they have no warrant for what they're doing to you. It's a different argument. It's so subtle. Maybe if you really understood what I'm saying, it wouldn't be so subtle. It's night and day what I'm saying, actually. So, please, I guess I'm getting focused on this now. Wait, I'm obsessing on it. Everybody is not listening very carefully. This is not us having to choke the government to give up the goods. The way the place is written is there's a duty and obligation. If they've failed it, they can't go to step two. That they have is a crime. Our problem and our trouble is to get us there and then see the next potential problem. Is the occupier there or is the law there? And a court of equity will get you there pretty quick, at least to that point where you get to see. And then there's some things and techniques you get to do to force the point upon the judge, the recalcitrant judge, which you don't walk in and say, oh, they're not going to give you the law. You give them the choice, then you get to watch what's going to happen, and then you have some things behind what you're watching and what you're doing in order to check all that, to bring those issues forward. Why? Because we're an ignorant people. It takes more than opinion. It's definitely going to take more than opinion. You see what opinion does on the internet. You need the facts. Even the facts aren't enough anymore. So you got to have the facts against the law. That's like a court case. So you have the court of public opinion is what you're trying to do. You're trying to educate people what the standards are. Something we've far away and gone long ago lost that have to be brought back. So anyway, that's a bother to me as I think more and more about this. We are not looking at this correctly. And let me go on here. Sound Minds, YouTube, Cybernosis, thank you for checking in and making a comment. Cybernosis says, you eerily sound like the late William Cooper. Keep up the good work. The first part of that, I was a little concerned. I'll just go with your second part. Keep the good work. Thank you very much. I'll do my best here to continue providing information on how this thing works, the oppressions that are on us, that are coming, that have been on us, the things that I still think we can do about it, but we have to do about it, and the things that may take all of us, which is why they want us divided anyway. Even all of us in the choir are divided, it seems. And certainly from my perspective, there's only a janitor or something that wants to do anything relative to this choir. And so we have a real serious problem. I don't know how this is all ends up turning out. It will only take one, though. I think it takes one on the proper point to snap people out of the problem. They'll be happy someone else did it. But again, as we've heard, if historical numbers mean anything, it only takes 3 to 5, maybe 10% to actually shift that change. Now, what we're up against is a cancer inside our system. It may not look like much, but it's placed throughout, and so that they're going to have about a 5 to 10%. They have a 5 or 10% advantage already inside that system, which is not resetting. It's actually going to transform. It's all in the mind. I can watch. I can see it in people's thoughts. They're already in your mind, and you don't really appreciate that. So. One thing I do want to say, I want to make a contribution maybe to this electoral cycle, the election thing that's going on. If you're a voter, if you're a presidential voter, you'd best put some effort into identifying your representative elector in your state. Figure out who that is. Find out who it is. There's, I think, two of them. Find those people and make contact. Be respectful and all. They're the elector. Remember that. Remember the hierarchy. As a voter, you got no say on the federal level. As an elector, that's the vote. You want to make contact with the elector and urge a vote for your favorite captor in chief instead of relying on your status as the voter. Being the elector of the Electoral College, the thing that saved your bacon last time, folks, if you think about this, is the one actually electing the President of the United States. And so I want to remind people, you keep thinking you're going down to the polls and electing a President of a nation, and it's not you that does that. And so if you would get together, I think, and whomever, I'm not going to say which one, either one. I told you that we would benefit from Trump being in, not because it was Trump, but because it would stop the onslaught of what you see now is coming as under COVID-19 as well. It would slow that down for a bit if we could get rid of that. And you're watching them. It's like they're gearing the engine up to start that up against us. We have had a breather. We haven't seen the fulfillment of what could have happened. But the reason for that, I don't know. So I can tell you that the producers benefited. This nation actually benefited a bit when we moved from Obama to, or the liberal, progressive, whatever, Democrat, whatever they are, want to call themselves, they're actually transhumanists is what they end up being. They're believing in the green religion and other things that are not real good for people, not really good for us. That we would get a reprieve a bit with Trump. So I'm going to say that again this time. But we are in a serious trouble that COVID allows us to interfere with that nobody wants to stop, not even Trump. And so for those of you that are paying attention to the way this place is wired, contact your respective state elector. The elector elects. The voter gives your opinion on national level presidential offices. You understand your Senate has been subverted because now it's Democracy Senate. They allowed that in the amendment. That messed up a whole lot of stuff. In fact, that translated to a problem in the states when the Supreme Court said that counties couldn't be representative of their areas like the federal Senate was. And so we've seen an adulteration really happen coming out of the courts as well, as it would as you see when you see the rule of law and democracy wanting to internationalize the place. See, we didn't understand. Everyone took an oath to defend domestic enemies, foreign and domestic, and we haven't. We just haven't. And so contact your elector. The elector is going to elect the captor-in-chief. That's who you want to focus some energy on. And then if you're a voter, go to vote and do what you want to do there. But remember how the place is wired, and don't think that just rallying around get out the vote or vote harder or whatever is going to do anything at that level. And then I can tell you it doesn't matter. We have some serious problem. There's some even serious ignorance in the system. And we watch now as COVID explains to us, even if you're seriously ignorant, you will allow harm onto others and you think that's okay as an official. Nobody, no one, anywhere has challenged this at all. We just have the people that are being the victims who are complaining. And that's not enough. If you haven't seen in 10 months nothing changed that way, you aren't paying attention that it's not enough. Remember, electors, not voters, elect. Okay? And so if you can get that clearly presented, put some energy where you want it to go. Like I said, focus your energy where it does the best, not what I see going on right now. What would we used to say? What was in the revolution radio or broadcast, whatever the heck that, my first station was, flood the phones, folks. Find your elector, flood the phones, or whatever you can to contact them and let them know what you feel. Urge them to go with the candidate of your choice, whatever you feel you need. That's how that part works. And speaking of going into that part working and Trump, or not working. It's really a mixed bag. And in all honesty, I've never seen a president have to come up with 4 years of nonsense like this guy has. I don't know what he would have done had he not been focused. I know they would not respond to JMD's 4 letters in explaining we could help on the production side. They're not interested in that. So that's why I'm telling you it's not such a rosy bed with this guy either. But he's doing some things. Trump issues sweeping orders stripping job protections for tens of thousands of federal employees. I'm just going to go down a few things. Again, you can read. The directive issued Wednesday strips long-held civil service protections from employees whose work involves policymaking, allowing them to be dismissed with little cause or recourse, which, like the political appointees who come and go with each administration. Quote, President Trump is delivering on his promise to make Washington accountable again to the citizens it's meant to serve, Russell Voigt, director of the Office of Management and Budget, said in a statement. Quote, this is a much needed reform will increase accountability in essential policymaking positions within the government. Close quote. Yeah, I forced myself to say that the second time wrong just so I could correct it. Anyway, so this is something that I do believe in, that this president has done better. And what this essentially does is it starts to making accountability, and they've been having trouble getting rid of employees that don't really do work. I have my own view on these set in stone jobs that the government officials, employees have had to protect them, but on the other side, I'm calling this a declaration of war on the civil service, said Richard Loeb, senior policy counsel for the American Federation of Government Employees, the largest union representing federal workers. Well, that's been sort of the problem. You get, this is the inside cancer that I've been telling you about. The same kinds of people get in. They have an agenda. They keep pushing it. We had a lot of trouble watching you saw Trump change into the new administration. They didn't want to change on the administrative side, on the employee side. It's been very difficult. I'm not even talking about Trump. I'm talking about having to deal with the agencies. They were reluctant to change at all. And so these people that are in there breed their own culture. And the unions have been helping that. And I'm not talking whether unions are good or bad. I'm saying that this condition was not allowing a clearing out of people that may not be in such a good way for actually serving the people as they ought to, and being in positions to make policy for such a long time that they could guide this condition, this cancer inside the system, which I directly witness. So I'm thinking this is a better idea, notwithstanding what the union rep says, and a civil war. No, this is that sensationalism. He wants to say this is a civil war. That's not the civil war. And so we want to do some sensationalism, but if we look at the inside, this is one of the things that's the cancer that I keep talking about that allows these people and their cult, their culture in government as employees to be under the radar the whole time and be there for decades. Like lots of y'all allow the senators and the congressmen for decades to mess you around, and then you wonder, like someone like Biden and then his son and all this stuff, all this thing, like you didn't hear it with the Clintons and Uranium One and all that international hullabaloo. No, see, we just like memory hole stuff. All this corruption just keeps going down the hole, down the memory hole, and we never stop to fix it. This could start to do that on the administrative side. Representative Don Beyer, a Democrat, whose Northern Virginia district includes about 85,000 federal workers, said, in the order, if enacted, would usher in loyalty tests and further politicizes agencies that have become deeply partisan workplaces for Trump. Well, that works both ways, and this has been the problem. What they wasn't able to do is to get rid of the cult that was not looking at either party, but at establishing that international agenda. Anyway, it's a quote here. It's an attempt to redefine the civil service as the political arm of the presidency rather than public servants who work for the American people, Beyer said, calling the result, quote, open cronyism that does not benefit the country but the president. Well, it is the administration of the executive, isn't it? So that's really a false statement in a way. I think it's always been a political arm, and I can tell you from experience, I know it's a political arm, but it was before Trump. And we've been trying to make just honor the law, and they can't do that in these bureaucratic conditions. And so bureaucrats inside have been making decisions that they ought not be making, and you can't get them out because they're so-called union protected. But here's the bottom line to all this. Is Trump doing it incorrectly? Is it somebody in an office, I don't care who they are they doing it within the constraints established at this time for what's going on? Trump's new order closely follows issuance of rules telling agencies to provide only the minimum accommodations required by law to assist underperforming employees before disciplining them, and to make the maximum use of their discretion to choose discipline either for poor performance or misconduct. Doesn't say that it's unlawful. And so the bottom line is the complaints are wholly outside of their ability to make value in the discussion, to contribute anything, and the executive within the authority of the law is making some adjustments, as every president would. Again, I am interested in this because this is, may allow for a breakup of the internal metastasization of the cancer that's inside the government that actually attacks and prohibits production, which is the basis of our society. And so, it's the way for this green religion, this sustainable development, to infiltrate the system silently and under cover of agency rule in order to destroy you all. And it's really an invisible thing that's going on, but until you see it, that's all you start looking around and finding. It's almost kind of a nutsy, kind of crazy in a way. I always have to wonder, am I really seeing it? Is it as pervasive as I keep seeing it? And then COVID hit, and I see even people agree. You look around, they're just nuts. They just can't get it. They can't get it. I have to say that there's been a little bit of pressure relief going out in the public without a mask, and people aren't sneering at you quite as much anymore. So maybe they just come to terms with the equity of that, right? So one other thing I want to remind us of, with this, what doesn't change is the internal underlying cancer in the United States of America, probably everywhere, certainly in the United States where you wouldn't think it would be, was this military connection. I think I got this from Media Monarchy Twitter, reminding us from 2010, Pentagon will help Homeland Security Department fight domestic cyber attacks. Again, in this election cycle, a little bit on this theme, we are concerned about all this this nonsense that's going on in censorship and election steering and all. Well, the military is back there watching it all. And so don't ever forget about that, and don't ever forget that there might be this coup, you know, this silent coup going on, and it's not going to be fast acting. Folks, you really have to pay attention to this. The occupier or occupiers or those that are trying to wrest the control of the tiller of the ship of state do not want you to find out about it on any side. So I don't, unless the mass chaos would help something. See, if it goes into mass chaos, then nobody knows where all the stuff falls. But so each faction will be more likely to go more slow, so they don't wake the natives. And that's the internet. I keep telling you about this. The international law provision, if they ever wake you all up, they're going to be in real trouble. And we see evidence of that. We see evidence that, and I think it was World War II, Mussolini, his family, his wife, his cabinet hanging. People just finally done it. Now, I would hope we could be better than that. Maybe not. I keep seeing so many people want to talk about going to the violence. But at any rate, that's a different way of perspective. And I don't know. We need to come through this with a better awareness, not a animal awareness. We really need to step up. The Pentagon will help Homeland Security Department fight domestic cyber attacks. They're behind the spaghetti western false front that you believe is America and the free, home of the free and the brave, whatever the heck that statement used to be. The fee and the slave is what it is. You're being controlled by this. And this has always been sitting, and I thank Media Monarchy for reminding us through his Twitters, as he reproduces daily things for the years. I reported on this myself. Again, it reminds us to be remindful of the military-industrial complex, which we now see in the news as well. Pentagon to move its biometrics data to Amazon Cloud Services, so you see who the players are. Patrick Wood writing, this is a perfect example of how technocrats within the military-industrial complex and those in the big tech world are bonding tightly together. Leaders of one can whine and complain about the other, but when the sun goes down, they both retire to the same bedroom. And so we see again the Department of Defense wants to make major improvements in biometric surveillance capabilities. Why? If it's inside the country. And now we see again the evidence of what I tell you, that the military is not looking to protect you. It's looking to protect something else. You are the enemy. They told you that back when 9/11 hit. We're back to that. This is hindsight 2020. Will you see it? Will you notice behind? Will you see the future? Then COVID hits. 10 months, you still ain't seen it. Oh, you complain about it, but you still ain't seeing it. But what I'm talking about, how to kill COVID, how to kill the cover of COVID, so you expose this thing. Because if you expose COVID the way I'm saying, you get back at this thing. If people haven't figured that jump, and I don't know if people can even conceive of what I'm saying, that's why you can't be quiet. You have to expose this because it gives us the door to get to this stuff. Why they're even doing this. It takes away their reason for being. And it's not the only place, but the COVID offered a weak spot. They have monstrous Achilles heel, and I am just astonished that no one wants to, well, not no one, but most of y'all don't want to exploit that, even to your own benefit. So the military sits back there the whole time. They want to go, they're on the internet, they're in control of it. 2010, we're reminded again today of the 2010 condition. They told us, I reported on it, that's why I felt, you kind of forget yourself, it was all the stuff we keep talking about. There it was, one of the notices. That was also the time I told you about all these international things coming in, the modernization acts. They all came together. It was all for today and what's coming. All for today and what's coming up. And we have an ability to knock their knees out, and we're not doing it. It's tied to this. This is one of the things that's going on, and you're going to hear, as I move a little quicker, I won't get there quite yet, but Clint Richardson's exposing that now. He's bringing up another thing, he's produced another documentary, 9 hours worth if you have some time, that is bringing this military thing forward now, is what I've been talking to you. What I say is, what I talk to you about how to stop is what he now exposes is coming. So it's, again, as I've told you, people that are researching and studying the truth of this and trying to bring out, all of our stuff will come together, however we describe it, whatever words we use. And now, Pentagon, goes to the cloud. We've seen the indications of what the new medical condition is. We talked about the Obama scare, then Trump scare. It doesn't change parties. All the same. Why? Because there's this underlying military thing that happens in this country anymore. Hospitals and VA clinics use XECAN, Z-CAN, facial recognition and palm scanners to track patients. Okay? So what else do you really need to know? This thing is on the move. Massachusetts area hospitals and VA clinics, all you veterans, you thought you were fighting for against tyranny and foreign enemies, well, you got them domestically, and there's a system itself. And if you don't get square on this, we're really going to have, as people, we'll have just a ton of trouble. Massachusetts area hospitals and VA clinics have been installing XECAN, facial recognition cameras to identify and track patients, according to ZCAN. I guess I'll say that. They can have been providing, quote, touchless technology, you're going to hear this in Clint Richardson's documentary, that we're going, he'll expose to you the definitional base. Just go to Merriam-Webster's and look around the words, you'll start seeing what I've been saying, you'll see what he's telling you. The technologist is out there, technocracy, these all have the form, it's the information they moved on, and they don't give you the substance. This is the technology in this is where they're pulling you along. It's tied in. Also now face scanning to where, folks? You think that they have a little computer in their hospital? No. This is going up to the services like AWS, Amazon, which is also tied into the military. What did I tell you about when the military came out in March or April to help do tests? I said, that's your introduction, that the military is treating you. You are being treated like a vet-needed animal, and they're there to help you. And then we heard about Operation Warp Speed, which is the military bringing their vaccine to you. And so, again, I don't know, the writing is on the wall. Again, hindsight is 20/20. Why aren't we acting? No, we'd rather just complain and get in arguments with people. Right here, they're telling us the notices, they're bringing this stuff. As a patient and trying to get care, you're going to be put in databases, and these databases are going to be used by the military and all third-party vendors and all these contractors to do whatever they have to do to make what? To profit from you. And that may even include your death. What do you think so-called cancer treatments are? It's just prolonging a death. Well, how do we know that? Because we don't understand these mechanisms, just like we don't have a test. We don't have a test, and then folks, I'm going to get to it here, hopefully. Oh, the CDC is claiming they have a test. So we're going to get that. Keep listening. They're claiming they have a test now. They can't stop cancer. Well, they give you cancer in the vaccines. And they can't stop it on the other end, but we keep trusting, just like we keep trusting in everything else. When our trust failed, we should have been man and woman enough to stand up and take responsibility and say, no, our trust is broken. It can't be fixed. Now we have to fix it. What was that? What did I just say? That's the maladministration provision in the Virginia Constitution that I told you was going to be likely our model moving forward, and that's why it probably happened. Virginia fell on its face, and yet the model sits there to remind us. It's going to take everybody who then stands up on their own to have their own harm and their own cause, and then we stand united with that against these people. And I don't mean just stand. We'll then have the advantage by the record in order to move these people along as we learn to do and interact better than just kind of go into the Second Amendment, which is not going to happen. The military is involved in this, folks. I don't know if you kind of get this. But, moving into what I was touching on last week, and I have to apologize a bit. I did read through it, but I didn't. There's some concepts in this I think people need to read as well that a heads up was given to me like a week ago now. Didn't have time to research it. I read it a little bit. I saw some things that it was Venom Nimbus. I don't know if I can pronounce that correctly, but sent me an article that Venom Nimbus wrote, and so that is something I read. It's a whole bunch of information based in this word syndemic that's coming on. This new word is like climate change. And if you, it's like reset. If, like, I don't know, people don't think it's a reset. No, it's not. It's like climate change. It's not about the climate. Like any of this stuff, it's not what it is. And it's covering certain things. And what we're told here is line up for your social vaccine against the global syndemic of COVID. This is now the integration of communicable and non-communicable. This is what you saw now that the CDC is showing you that it's not COVID but comorbidities. You're watching, it's one health. It's all coming together. I'm not sure now, I can't remember totally what was all printed in this article, but I'm going to give you a link to his, I assume it's a gentleman, the article to read and see the existence of this concept of syndemic being promoted now and the synergism of the pandemic into the future. And this leads into, interestingly to my mind, what Clint Richardson just recently produced, when you understand how this is integrating together. If you want to, you can read about this condition. You can see a lot of references to what this is about, and it's not, I won't get lost in it. We can read the history, we can see it's being done. My point is it's being done, and we can avoid all that if we identify the proper course now. If we don't, they're going to convince people that this is something. Syndemic, have you heard the term? He's writing. You will soon. The term was created by a thing called Merrill Singer. Merrill Singer is a medical anthropologist with a focus on structural and biosocial factors in health, drug use, HIV/AIDS, global warming, and health, disease interactions, and the elimination of health disparities, close quote. Don't underestimate the problem with global warming and health. I talked to you about this before. So that's why I think this is a good contribution to our general knowledge. The Merrill creature isn't particularly interesting, but his terminology is, and it fits so well with everything that's going on right now, even down to the word entomology, truly fascinating. But he says he digresses. Let me move down a little bit. You can read this thing, get a flavor. What have I talked about, the terminology? It's all important to understand. It's how you identify these critters that would act as God-men against you, putting you into a human, the color of a man instead of the man that you ought to be. And you're being placed there and kept there because you won't stand up of a man or a woman in your own right. He goes on to write here, syndemic, S-Y-N-demic, we're living in sin here though, could join a list of terms or phrases which should become daily parlance after the outbreak, such as lockdown, flattening the curve, herd immunity, and PPE. Again, all these things were to get their to work on you in a certain way, and they work on people fairly well. From COVID-19 to COVID-20, one virus, two diseases, calls for the COVID to be rechristened COVID-20, and for our institutional response to be tailored towards syndemic thinking, not pandemic. Okay, so they're shifting us again, and they're going to integrate your entire environment. That's why I told you about your health laws are in your environmental laws. And you saw global warming. Well, that's sustainable development. Environment impositions on your health and whether your health is going to be a problem or the cause that they now take on as champions to help you because you're so sick, but you're also causing environmental harm by it. And so they have a double amount of work that they need to do for your benefit, which even means taking you out because you are the problem ultimately. And so the idea here, who is helping to promote this now? He also identifies as Lancet, and we've heard their problems recently. So we have another promoter, all these known system periodicals and publications are all part of the so-called media, so-called, that wants to get your favor that they haven't any authority, but they're actually the ones that are promoting this endemic and that we're moving into that direction. Here's a document for a link for that. You might want to look at that. I respond to thank him about this to us, and this is what I said from last week, that the never forget, these are minor demons, are the syndemic, they are the syndemic, and think you human animals are a comorbidity to environmental health. If people don't begin engaging properly, instead of impotent bloviation, that includes all of our social interaction, even protesting on the streets, they don't care about all that. And you see your decisions, the decisions don't care about all that, the so-called officials. At any rate, they won't know enough to be able to. You don't understand what I'm talking here, you won't understand how to respond. This is a distraction principle that they're doing a head fake and we can fall for it. That's why I don't even get focused in on that they're moving into syndemic. That's just them. I could care less. It doesn't change the fact that they have to move this thing through a deception. And our job is to make sure we discern that and find what the deception is and find the one thing they violate, which is all the time is the law to violate this. Remember, this is adjunct policy. They're offering you an alternative, and if you don't respond correctly, this the way they've interpreted how this works is you agree. Your consent, their victory is your silence. And it's not just you screaming and yelling about it or going to a commission meeting and telling them how wrong they are and then walking out. That's not proper engagement. To have proper engagement, you have to understand better what I'm saying about how this is put together so we can interfere with it. It'll just be interference in the start, but so that we can actually have an effect. Part of it is we become the example where it can't fit, it can't attach. And if we, there's a couple techniques for doing that. And again, I'd have to go back through all my broadcasts to be able to explain how that would work. If you've listened to me for length of time, I've been saying it. I've been telling you, you know I've been saying it, and I still don't understand why I don't have more push in the what seems to be the proper direction relative to objective basis. And this brings me now, okay, so the proper thoughts, you got to understand what you're up against, know the battlefield. And last week or so, I guess it is, yeah, about a week now. In fact, he was probably posting it while I was doing my broadcast at some time around that, Wagging the Dog, Part 1, the story behind the story of COVID-19, Red Pill Sunday School, Clint Richardson. He's actually going to change now from Red Pill Sunday School. I noticed one of the YouTubes. Here's a 9 hours worth of information. I want you to pay attention to what I talk about in different terms to try and show you we can deal with it, that he'll be talking about dual-use technology. For me, when I heard that, it wasn't even a question. That's military. And so he shows you how in the system and what's going on internationally, this dual-use gain-of-function technology is a cover for a military imposition under color of peacetime use. Again, bringing the military to the forefront, not just some green religion crazies. These folks are really promoting all the same things. Listen carefully to the how they work it out, the alternative. What I've told you, the self-inflicted wound, what I describe as the self-inflicted wound, you'll hear Clint exposing to you, that where you hear that they, under the color of trying to protect people, they figure, like they have in this COVID-19, what could this thing that we have, what could it create, be created, and what could it do? And they say, okay, well, we have to investigate that. The subtle theory here is, well, we need to investigate it so we can protect ourselves in case an enemy does it. But don't forget, this is information that's shared around the world pretty much. And we saw some of that interplay here in the COVID-19. And I say that just COVID-19 is a title. There's nothing in it inside this one. But he says that he'll explain to you, like I explained, what I call the self-inflicted wound. You create a harm that you then come to rescue. It's like a form of Munchausen syndrome. And so it's invented and conceived biological threats to test whether or not the technologists can tame the Frankenbeastie they've invented. This is a real insidious problem. And we're going to have to get inside of this. And part of what my view of what I've been doing on the, if you say the legal side, is to at least gain one step against that. And that's where we make sure that they identify the infectious agent. Why? Not just to identify the infectious agent. If you're playing with what I'm saying, just thinking in step-by-step modes, you're missing it. The reason why you do that, you ensure they're going to identify this in the future now for sure. What you want to do is you want to identify whether or not it's novel, whether or not it's man-made. Why? Because you want to get these guys before they hit a vaccine on you. They're not protected for them inventing a harmful thing that gets out in the environment. They're liable to that. If we can get the local governments to do their duty honestly and correctly and lawfully, we'll have notice of the type of organism that it's actually out there, not the myth like now, but when this thing, when it goes from exercise, live exercise, to actual attack, we're going to be far and away forward if we have in every state a court case that says, you got to identify this thing so we can identify its source. Not just its existence so we can protect ourselves, but if it has a domestic source, it's been invented, or they did this CRISPR on it, we can go after the company that created that and got out. There's a liability for all that. We can do it as a society. We don't allow this. So always remember in this condition as well, we always say pseudoscience, and I hate using the words, this is not scientists. And you'll see, as Clint explains this to you farther into the hours of his documentary explaining this story behind the story. It's only one of the stories behind the story, but important as well. He says, I want to point out, he uses the word technologist. We're not dealing in science. We're not dealing with scientists. These are technologists. These are people that just use information and then go after, they use to get to some societal end. You heard the social vaccine that we're all expected to take because of now without COVID, but a combined morbidity, comorbidity, communicable, non-communicable condition, but it's all coming underneath the testing of whether through a military proposed need without the military as a label under peacetime. And this is good at getting us back over to Title 50 as well. It's always sitting here living in our lives today, and we're not addressing that, which in part we can start to do through the method I'm telling you. If everyone locally would stop this, would require and make sure that they're identifying these biological threats, that they are provable, not like the PCR, but provable. And all the five parameters around that on top of it, like susceptibility and these transmission and all that stuff, then we're going to be able to identify as a byproduct whether or not this is privately made, if it's novel. If it's novel, it's not natural. You'll see that too. This is all I've been talking about. All this is in Clint Richardson has identified this in his studies, his work, his findings from their statements. You'll see them repeat. And I think the video could have been maybe an hour or two. I didn't realize these experts stutter so much. But Clint will replay certain important passages for you as well, what I call the stuttering, that you may miss the little detail. You start to hear it. You start to see it. I think it's a good exercise to understand how they're speaking, where the problems are, what they really mean when they're talking these, what you think is an English language, is not. These are technologists that are not scientists that are utilizing the cover of a peacetime method to impose threats that they invent, that they then go solve. Like I said, it sounds like Munchausen syndrome or proxy, it seems to me. We're going to take care of you, but we're going to give you something that doesn't even exist in nature. None of this exists in nature. If it's novel, it's not natural. If it's not natural, they're dealing outside the law. If they're dealing outside the law, you got them. You just got to explain where and how. So Clint Richardson does great work again. You get to see it. I don't know if you've got the link. I'll have it on the blogcaster about 2 hours after when I post and get all the stuff compiled afterwards, going into what Venomnimus, I guess, I never heard that before. The Lancet article, you'll see this syndemic, this coagulation, this blood clot going on relative to the social vaccine and social control, where they bind your needs to health and environment. It's all the same people run through the Lancet. And there's other, I mean, on and on. We can go on and on about this problem. This is the problem. We can go on and on. We can talk about this for near ever. To me, all that, once I see it, I told you about the syndemic. I told you that this is what they're doing. And I moved on. Why? Not to move away. I'm saying that's just proving they're on their way to the goal. We really have to come up with our action now. And I don't focus on now. I know they're running. I know the play they're running. I need to figure out how we're going to shut it down. And so that's partly what I work on, partly what I suggest. And it's everything objective. In other words, we have a black and white to back it up. Everything that we would suggest as any kind of an action is always backed up by something objective, so that you remove that from the arsenal of an accusation that the other side, whomever that may be, the adversary, the governor, the court itself, you take away all that away from them, because you come in the black and white. And so this, you see, this is a war against us. The military is involved. The literal military is involved in this, and yet the agents, the minions, the demons are out there to advance it for their purposes. And it's all this false front. They're utilizing what they promote to you as a benefit. They're actually doing something really dastardly with it. Now, do I focus on that? No. As soon as I see it, I know they're doing that. I need to figure out how to interfere with it. As a society, we need to interfere with that. Not focus on how bad it looks. That's irrelevant. It's how to stop them, because they've got a plan. They've had a long plan. And I'm not just, everyone wants to point out just to, like, Rockefellers. These are all integrated. There's all kinds, thousands and tens of thousands of organizations. And yet there's a couple of cores, like in this case, the military. Where do you think they came up with dual use as an idea? The term itself screams military. It's one use or another, not even poly-use or multi-use. No, dual. And so, I've never had a question in my mind. Certainly, Clint Richardson drives that home. Okay, so I'll let him speak for himself on all that. There's just so much there. To me, it just confirms everything I've been telling you. And my view is, okay, as I was watching his presentation, my mind is going, okay, what parts can I use today to advance, or tomorrow, once we get past today, tomorrow, what's available in a particular scenario, in a particular dynamic? So when I'm looking at a presentation, looking to see if there's anything that we can use as a tool, is there some information there that's packaged really nice and succinct that we can move over and move into a place that we can use it? And so there's a couple of things I noticed in there that haven't had a chance to go back and revisit, that possibly we can move forward. But see, since I'm hacking at the roots on this, anything above the roots is really not my focus, because that's going to grow and keep growing until I get the roots done, or until I girdle the trunk somehow, so it stops feeding it. So all these pieces of information are just showing you the beast is coming closer and closer on us to devour us. And so we need to be working more and more, well, if we care to do it, to stop this thing, or build, if you will, build the trap so it never dig a hole between you and it. It falls in the trap because it's not that smart. They claim to be smart, but they're not that intelligent. So there's an Achilles heel to all this for them, and we just have to understand that and go to that. Now, moving into this COVID and how to stop it and the lawsuits and the thing like that, what I've been asking you to consider and do, the Ohio case came up. I said it was a cool thing solely because I heard that, and I read a short snippet, that they were challenging that there was no isolate in the diagnostic panel. No case had done that before. And so I was saying, I was saying that was a good thing. That was going to be the first case in the nation. Well, again, part of this whole dynamic is to run covers over the top, costumes over the top, curtains over the top of the real thing. And so I've learned to be able to read tons of information. I'm looking for the weak link, the failure point. I'm looking for certain things that if I can find them, I realize what I'm dealing with. Again, once I see deception, I don't have to continue to prove the deception. I just accept that it's there and I got a problem. Now I got to solve for the fact that somebody's doing that. This Ohio case was interesting that no one had said that they were going to use the diagnostic panel to show the diagnostic panel, the FDA approved emergency instructions for the PCR test, couldn't explain how they were identifying it, and it says it in that document. But this court case comes out and says, yeah, they can't identify it. But then Gary L. gave me the Twitter to someone who else is promoting the case, which is great. Promote what you can. And I found the link quickly. I had a little bit of time. I didn't have a whole lot of time. I went and I looked. There was the complaint. I went through it. But I looked for the failures. I looked for what I call the incongruities in statements. And it didn't take too long. They do enter into the Jacobson issue. I've explained the problem, the advantage, if you will, if you can show how Jacobson's not applicable now and why you have to do that. Well, to move this thing along, I'm not going to discuss the case. I have the case. You have the link. You can get the case link. What I want to point out here is two points. There's an incongruity in the complaint, and there's, to my mind, a fatal flaw, which I've explained to you. If you make this flaw, you hand the prerogative power to the government, and the courts will say they're better positioned. The one decision anomaly was the Philadelphia case where the judge, federal judge no less, took on a rights violation that he was essentially challenging for Jacobson, saying that that decision was no good, and that we needed to look at the rights violations as well. That's an anomaly in its own. But here's the problem in these cases, that I now have to change my opinion. I'm not as enamored with the Ohio case, and here's the why. Reading number 13, paragraph number 13, the fact pattern for this case is extremely complex. A number of sections below discuss errors or the debunking of what is intentionally misleading information put forth by the state or CDC. It is indisputable that COVID-19 is roughly as dangerous as the seasonal flu, see below, less dangerous than many other infectious agents, that we have not taken such drastic steps to stop, and also that the reaction to COVID-19 is the definition of arbitrary and capricious. I'm going to end right there. Let's go back 2 points. The fact pattern for this case is extremely complex. I would say it is not. Why is it not? Because the fact pattern shouldn't be a pattern more than a production of evidence compliance with the obligation and duty upon the officials to identify an infectious agent. That is not in evidence. Therefore, how could they come in the second sentence to say it is indisputable that COVID-19, mere symptoms, is roughly as dangerous as a seasonal flu? That statement hands the prerogative to the government. The federal government usually takes that and says the state has the prerogative, period. That little statement, it is indisputable that COVID-19 is roughly as dangerous as the seasonal flu, is the fatal flaw. And then I rolled down to fact number, I think, 61. And that's where they then explain about the isolates the diagnostic panel doesn't explain that the isolates are available. Now, if they understood, which they do, they stated, the attorney states it, that the isolates were not available, how is it congruent that you say that it is indisputable that COVID-19 is equal to the seasonal flu? If there is no isolates, you can't use the word COVID because that's only symptoms anyway. relative to the power. You agree then that there's an underlying cause that is that the government has right to control. Your complaint then, if you listen very carefully, was only the mitigation factors. Just as I was telling you, is the second step you want to do, not the first step. You need to take away the fact that they have any power to make a decision. This case says and concedes that COVID-19 exists. If they concede it exists as a symptom and is only as dangerous, you've handed the government the prerogative. It doesn't really matter about the not finding the isolates. Because what that'll be covered over is that they're doing this in the new cover your assay coming up. They say other clinical observations have to be made. Anyway, so I looked at this. To me, it's a monstrous, fatal incongruity between number 13, number 61, and the admission that COVID exists at all. If you don't challenge that they didn't find it, the prerogative goes to the state. All you have then is whether or not rights are violated. Here's our problem. Here's our problem, folks. Even if they lift all that, I told you this was the problem back in March. If they lift it, they got this much power under nothing. They're going to advance the next stage, which you'll read is coming out of what Clint Richardson has pointed out now. They move their gain of function into function. What is claimed in the Tulis complaint as the endless emerging diseases. Endless emerging diseases. Endless, endless emerging diseases. You should remember that while you're watching Clint Richardson's work. It is a plan. It's utilizing the biodiversity convention and sharing information on in genomes and gene editing. So we have to stop. We can't agree with the COVID. We can't agree there's an infection agent. We don't have a position even to agree. We can't allow them to proceed without the evidence that there is anything. I don't care what you call it. You can call it COVID-19. You can call it COVID-20. You can call it whomever, whatever number you want, whatever name. I want to know what the infectious agent. My goal would be underneath all of this, as it has been, you challenge that. You require the states to be honest in their records and produce the infectious agent by test. And then the future comes when they are really making these things and making endless emerging diseases that are CRISPR-controlled and made to test you and how well you're going to handle this as a military exercise that you've been hearing of, that the military will do. And we get to identify, but as this thing comes in, who made it? Because it's novel. And then we get to go after them at that point for introducing a contagion in the society. Not waiting till that they get the power to make decisions to do whatever mitigation and then give you a vaccine with all this stuff they just made up. Munchausen syndrome. I give you a bruise and then we go to the doctor and I tell you how we're going to fix it and all this other stuff. And the bruise was half self-inflicted, if you will, on another victim. Third party self-infliction. We allow it where we have a voice and we don't respond. A child, the only difference in a child in that regard is that they can't or don't know to respond. Or they trust, see? You trust. For all your vociferous objection in the system and the state, you trust because you're not speaking out and then properly. So, the Ohio case admits COVID exists. That's a fatal error in my estimation. It hands the prerogative over to the government to make a decision. Then you're at the whim of these Bar Association members, whether they're in suits or in robes, to decide what the level is, and all you're talking about there is those human rights now because your rights are now compared to the state's, and as an animal, you have no rights. And as vets, we're caring for you, and we have the experts to say so. You allow all of that on you by not properly challenging, by agreeing that COVID is anything that agrees impliedly then that COVID has a cause, allows this harm upon you. David Tulis' case in Tennessee does not make that fatal error. And if it does, I need you to go read it, and I need you to send me an email, markonthebeast@protonmail.com, and show me where. Shocking revelations about the virus from the CDC itself. A must read for confirmation of what I've been saying since March. This is David Icke. I think we only had our crossing roads once. I told you about that with David Icke. He's coming back again to try and show you how the, and I'm not really criticizing too much, is one more presentation that I would, I have here to give you. You can start your track on where he's now seeing and he's now looking for confirmation. I've been telling you there is no test. I don't need any more confirmation, folks. I don't care how many graphs and pretty pictures you have. There is many ways to get at the fact of how wrong this is. There's only one thing that you have to do is find out. Your local government had an obligation to identify and confirm the existence and certify to an infectious agent. None of them did. That's all you have to know, and that means they have no power to do anything. This story wants to show you now, and I'm saying it so that if you're still confused, here's another example of how we get at it. Dr. Thomas Cohen, the shocking thing is that using their own methods, the virologists found that solutions containing SARS-CoV-2, even in high amounts, were not, I repeat, not infective to any of the three human tissue cultures that were tested. In plain English, this means they proved on their terms that this new coronavirus is not infectious to the human beings. It is only infective to monkey kidney cells, and only then when you add two potent drugs, gentamicin and amphotericin, known to be toxic to kidneys, to the mix. So here, this is what, I mean, medical treatment is. They weaken your system further, then they say they're curing you by removing that later. But they give you the sickness, if you will. And so here's a disclosure for now infectivity, for those of you paying attention, and trying to bring more to the point. This would only come if the court allowed them, the government, the respondents of the government, to come in and not prove and then disregarded your objections or striking of the failure to produce the burden and they kept moving. You would then bring that this is what they were supposed to know as well. You would need a whole lot more information. Here's another thing you bring. Another story here along the same lines, only poisoned monkey cell, kidney cells grew the SARS-CoV-2 virus. In quotes, the problem I have also is SARS-CoV-2, we've been told there's no isolates. How did they identify this? What are they using? And in any regard, it doesn't infect people. In other words, where it translates from animal to man, human, animals, more animals. Okay, so for those of you that are looking at the need of the government to make its case, this is another point that you now have, you bring forward to show they don't actually have the infectivity. This is another element of all this that I guess if I'm looking at even everything, we have to go ahead and consider, open our mind to what all really has to go on here. It's not such a small world that has to happen relative to all this infectious stuff. And that's another thing. I think it's very important that we understand this in how this works, because I don't think I knew as much about how little we actually know, what to expect, why things work, than I have through this process. That there's a study, and I'm trying to figure out how I want to approach it. There's a study. And my problem with these studies is they identify SARS-CoV-2, COVID-19, they go say it's in Wuhan, China. Now that is not even proven. And so these studies are also a failure as well. And when in my mind, I'm here talking this fast, if I was going to use that in a court case, that kind of is problematic. Because at some point, you're having to agree that this shows evidence of something, but then again, it's also wrong. And that's why it starts to become a lot easier just to go back and say, wait a minute, it's their burden. But in any regard here, they start mentioning a whole lot of things, but they explain that the infectivity did not infect any human cells. But that's a very important point. That's a very important problem. And we get back to then, what's the test showing us? Well, the test instructions say it's not telling us much of anything. That's a correlation. I mean, that's a confirmation. So where we step in on this, I don't know. Understand, when they talk about the Wuhan, China 2019 pneumonia outbreak, that's not SARS-CoV-2. That was just attributed. I have the link for you that shows that the origins was an implication, not science. This study also has a different test. It's called a plaque assay. I didn't know much about a plaque assay. So, get up on the internet, the wonderful thing that it is. I have two links for you about what a plaque assay does. I want you to pay attention. The first one's a little hard to understand. It's, I assume, Chinese people speaking English. But you got to listen very carefully to what they're saying. It's not so bad you can't hear them, but it's very, very hard to hear what they're saying. But I want you to listen for the fact that these plaque assays make a major assumption about something. So that's the problem there. And then another gentleman I send you over to, and he'll explain that he's been doing this for a long time. He'll explain when he's talking about how the PCRs are not something he would check, because this plaque assay counts the active viruses or active things. Again, that's the assumption part. The active things that would be in any sample, the numbers of things that would do it. That's still not testing whether or not that's going to be responsive to anybody, but it tells you that there's something there. So the plaque assay is a different test that you're not even hearing about, that this study that I'm looking at here talks to, that found that it wasn't infective for human cells. And so if you want to learn a little bit about plaque assays, you find out, well, we can count the viruses that we assume. Again, this is another problem. This is just like the PCR failure. Well, now we get to know the number, but we don't know what they do. We don't know what they are. And so we have a way to go through, slowly check how all this works, have an understanding of what they're doing. So now we just don't say, oh, that it's all bunk. No, we have a job to do. We have to stop these people, because when you listen to what Clint Richardson's exposing, this is what's coming next. What I was talking about last week and the week before. And it's all moving forward on self-inflicted wound. We'll invent a threat and we'll solve the threat. We invent technology under peacetime that the military's funding and pushing and right there to make sure they have dual use for. See, my view coming from Title 50, I sit in the military side. Everything's their use. When they said dual use, oh, they're going to give it over to the public. Well, what's it going to be used for there? Oh, profit. Control. It's a whole different view from my perspective. And so that's not even the point now. The point is, what are we going to do to stop that? The only thing I can find out we do locally is we shut down their ability to keep foisting it on us. And we give ourselves avenues of being able to prove at the time, and in the future, quickly prove whether, who, what, where did this thing come from? Is it man-made? We go after that company right away. We shut them down from having it get out. But if we don't have these controls, this is going to be an endless emerging disease lifestyle, and it doesn't get better. Now, one of the things we talk about, like Ohio, it starts to admit, even though they challenge, isolate, they admit that COVID exists. Now you're going to give the power for mitigation. We have some more stories and some people that are jumping in to do certain discussions. Fact check, does CDC study show 85% of COVID patients wore masks? Not exactly. Well, they go through their analysis. They go through how this is supposed to not be what is being promoted by the talking heads. We had this discussion about, do you use talking heads? Well, talking heads are good to give facts in the general knowledge. That's general public notice. Why you do that is that you show that even the general public knows about this stuff. Your officials ought to have, and they had a prior notice there because they were so-called the experts. And so you bring this out. If everybody knows it, then the court has no option but to know it. And so if you understand what I just said, you're dealing in a condition where solving problems that aren't even the point, but are trying to protect against a different type of a oppression. We're challenging whether why the courts have not looked at this already when it's all common knowledge using talking heads. This story is someone trying to analyze it, talking heads. The problem when you go through it, you start realizing when you get to the end, there is no test, there is no observation of how of the causative factor. The whole discussion here, arguing against someone else's argument, is frivolous because there is no core certification. And we could get lost in these, and we can go into the, oh, he said, she said. Maybe it was just he said here. I don't know. But anyway, we can get lost in that, or we can stop listening to this noise, realize there's going to be opinions on either side, and are we going to literally get in the middle of that and not be in an argument, be at zero potential, and have full current, full power available to us, like our own superconductor I was talking, that we are on the focus of what, in this case, wasn't done that was supposed to be of record. And we have little resistance at that point, if I can use the analogy of a superconductor. It's not our resistance. The resistance comes when the official failed. That's on them, not you. So this study was they're trying to do a fact check this and that on that study that I reported. The point is, for me, it's just telling you that they don't really know what's going on. They will argue in that last story that the sample size was too small and yet rely on the small sample size to prove their point. So, I mean, I'm reading all this stuff and essentially it's wasting my time, but I'm here to try and show you something here behind the woodshed so that you don't waste your time eventually in the future. You start to see these stories and why you just start disregarding them, but for certain things. And I will go read something like that to see maybe what the argument might be that rises to the level that might be used by your governor or your public health official or an attorney or questioned by a judge. I'm looking for certain things inside these stories again to give me notice of the direction that the system is going, like we saw the word pandemic just pop up just weeks ago, as they're now moving into and to, like a blood clot, coagulate these things, these communicable, non-communicable, moving them into environmental controls that the technologist is sitting there to invent harms and threats to you, to keep you fearful, to keep them relevant, and so they can bring protections, which is big bucks, and you see the governments are willing to go right with it. We have to stop that. These criminals aren't going to stop that. And so there was an issue, okay, the mask, this, that's mitigation. That's beyond the point, but you have to understand where they're going. And then we get this, if you into the masks, and in this case this is important because if you're trying to go to court and there's already a rule that you can't go to court with a mask, you may have to have a pre-argument before you get into your hearing. If you kind of make a slip and want a hearing, I wouldn't want a hearing. We'd want to go on the pleadings. Just let the court deal with the fact of the self-evident proof in the petition. But Max, another story here, another aspect of the mask problem that you really need to know just as a health condition for you all that may be partly, okay, giving them all wear a mask just to get along. I'm so fortunate I don't have to do that. Wherever I go, early on people were giving me the sneer look over their masks, but anymore we just walk around, it's fine. I see people now walking around, there's like the two factions, and everybody just is quiet and does their thing. Great, fantastic. I haven't had the problem. But even so, we want to know if we're going to wear a mask, what are these things? I don't know how about you, but I've had these masks, and I've worn masks before. Funny, I haven't worn one since this thing, but most of the, for allergies or dust, those masks have a funny, weird smell. I never understood that. Never understood how they could have that smell. What are they just? They look pure white and all, but here we may have the answer. Masks are toxic. And there's a story that you now can find about this. You may want to check into this because this is a serious, real serious problem. I'm really kind of surprised at it myself. And the story written here is, I keep telling people masks are toxic, and the die-hard brainless mask holes keep arguing with me. I even get people to claim they don't prevent oxygen from getting into your body, which makes no sense to me at all. And it's common sense that if you cover your mouth with anything, even a Kleenex, it prevents a proper airflow. Well, moving on through and down into this story, there's a gentleman that apparently posted to Facebook, which I don't do and I don't get. I don't do faceplant. A guy named Guy, literally a guy named Guy Crittenden, who is a hazmat specialist of some sort, editor of a periodical for many 25 years, who they did tests, and his statement was that the masks is causing you lung cancer, and the way it's doing that is because they pre-treat these materials with a harmful gas to sterilize them, and they stay in the fibers, and you get to breathe that. So just all you people that have to wear the mask, because we read from the 3M mask thing that they can cause health if you improperly wear them, maybe this is part of the problem, but you're having to wear this as a health professional, you might want to consider some of this. They won't kill you now, they're going to kill you over time, apparently. This is not our opinion, this is what the OSHA, apparently this guy's an OSHA specialist or guy, this is what OSHA says. So we can go ahead and have arguments, or we can start looking around and say, wait a minute, these idiots in official political offices aren't doctors, first of all, to prescribe at all, let alone not having any power, police power to prescribe in the first place, once we get that proven, not by us proving it, by them not showing the evidence, that's proven, but they're forcing people to do certain things that are actually deadly over time. And my view on this is, why wouldn't a system, stupid people will just go ahead with their fear aside, we're fear to something, and they just go along with it, and they don't care that they're telling you to do something that's harmful. Here's the other problem, that's risk management. They don't care that they kill you slow. You'll provide the service that your domesticated animal will provide the service that they want over time. They'll make more of you. But they've figured out your value over years. You'll last that long, and then you get cancer, and then you go back into that same system that mistreated everybody, and you'll be mistreated to the very end of your life in misery. Not misery, misery. So here's an interesting story. It kind of answered why. I don't know that that's the case in all these masks, but they smell funny to me. I can't really wear them for the smell so much, but sometimes, again, you're doing your own risk management. I got to have dust filtration, or else I can't breathe at all. I better have some I don't like the smell of, and then to have no breathing at all. So these folks allow you to be poisoned with a carcinogen by using these masks. I'm sitting here quiet. Do you folks realize they don't care about you? It's about making policies. It's all about risk management. I've been talking about this forever. Ever that I've been broadcasting, and before. It's our own, why do we have to fight all the time with Jefferson Mining District when we were doing comments and things? That's what this system thing does. That's what the process is. That's what adjunct policy admits. It gets in and gives you an alternative, and then they get you to fight over it, and they get their outcome. You call it the Hegelian dialectic. Okay, that's the name you want to put on it. Well, there's a way to respond to all that, to stop it. And someone said that some doctor here said, I just got a link given to me, that said that she would become an expert witness for this. It was a professor, Dolores Cahill, and I have a link for that, breaking news. And this is a group of people in Europe that have come together. And she said she'd go anywhere to make an expert witness. I'm not sure if you do your case right, you probably don't need it, but it'd be nice in case you get into a dogfight. And a judge is corrupt and wants to promote sustainable development. As we heard, the general director of the UN said, this is not about health, this is about politics and advancing climate change and sustainable development. We got all the proof out of their own mouth. Again, they say it, not us. And she's saying she'd come, if it gets into a dogfight, she'd come and help be a medical expert. Well, they've got a group back of doctors that are explaining, will explain to you it's just the flu, as one of many things that she says. The same professor, a medical expert in her field, is now explaining to us if we didn't know that we did behind a woodshed, but we're dealing with the flu. Okay, so this is the cover. And remember, we are going back into another flu season. And I don't know how this thing that hit us really bad, it's just going to mutate to something else. Remember, too, you don't just get one flu. You could get a whole bunch of flus. It just depends on the environment you live in and what your body's ready for or not. And so those people listening now that they got the flu and now we got the flu vaccine, and I told you, like, when the pigs fly flu, they're going to make multivalent vaccines right after that. You saw that happen. You're getting that pigs fly flu vaccine anyway. Again, big dollars. And what? And then the ramification, the consequence of your health being more susceptible to more colds and going downhill after that so they can treat you some more and more money comes out. It's fascinating, organized criminal syndicate, what they've got. At least 25 dead from flu as doctors urge people to get vaccine. So now they promote 25 people. Why is that even news? To get the vaccine. Well, that's why it's the news. And yet we move over to South Korea. And this is what I found fascinating. Also, this is that first story was in Queensland, right, where they're locking everybody down hard. South Korea sticks to flu vaccine plan despite safety fears after 25 die. So the flu vaccine is killing people over in South Korea, the one that Australia is promoting their people to get, so they don't care about you. It's about how they're going to pump that vaccine and whatever that control system does, whatever that data acquisition and whatever that monitoring that they're doing and whatever that feeds them into the system. And remember, when you go into these places, you're going to be tracked and traced, and now it's going facial recognition to track y'all going into the cloud. The military has their stuff there too. I've told you it was all going to be big blood clots all coagulating somewhere. And so we see now what caught my eye was the same, that the 25 people that died from the flu in Australia were 25 people that died from the vaccine in South Korea. And then that number almost doubles by last night. South Korea sticks to flu vaccine plan after death toll rises to 48. So you be the judge. You figure out whether these are safe and sane medicines and whether or not they're even valid. And we're coming up to a point here when we get to this test. I want to know about this flu. What about this flu? How are they diagnosing the flu? They're not talking about flu, not influenza, not COVID-19. And that's the symptoms, remember? That's not the infectious agent. We assume it's SARS-CoV-2, but it's not. It's been an implied presumption. The tests of which, they didn't follow the Koch postulates. This is this whole thing, this whole house of cards is resting on this origin, which is just a big story. But how are they diagnosing the flu? Found it fascinating. Did a quick check last night. I just find it fascinating. How are they differentiating between the flu, influenza, and COVID? They have the same symptoms. They tell you they have the same symptoms. Your respiratory illness might be the flu if you have fever, cough, sore throat, running, or stuffy nose, body aches, headaches, chills, or fatigue. Or want to take a medicine? Some people may have vomiting or diarrhea, though this is the more common in children. Okay, fine. That's the flu. There's a flu test. Oh, there's a test, folks. What kinds of flu tests are there for flu? Flu, not COVID, with the same symptoms. A number of flu tests are available to detect influenza viruses in respiratory specimens. The most common is called the Rapid Influenza Diagnostic Tests, RIDTs, work by detecting the parts of the virus antigens that stimulate an immune response. Can I stop right here? For those of you that have been listening and listen any longer, can I stop right there? They detect parts of virus antigens that stimulate the immune response. Sounds like what test, folks? Do we go to the punchline already, or do I drag it out just a little bit longer? I can already tell you where we're going with this, folks, and this is how fast it takes to read this stuff and move on. No, I mean move on with the package of information that you need. Another question going down. This is, okay, I'm going to hold that out. What's the punchline there that they're checking for antigens from immune response? What is the test? Can I have a flu and COVID at the same time? Why, yes, you can. Is it possible to have the flu as well as other respiratory illnesses and COVID-19 at the same time? Health experts are still studying how common this can be. Oh, they don't know. And COVID-19 is a fraud, so I don't know how they can even do that. At any rate, let's just agree that COVID-19 is something, even though COVID-19 and the flu is not the infectious agents, And they get to that when they get to the so-called, part of the punchline came out, to the test. Some of the symptoms of flu and COVID are similar, making it hard to tell the difference between them based on symptoms alone. Perfect. Why I'm even on this page. Tell me more. How did you figure the difference out? Diagnostic testing can help determine if you are sick with flu or COVID-19. Oh, second clue. Can they test for COVID-19? And what test do they use? That's a lie. Is there a test that can detect both flu and COVID-19? Here we are, folks. Is there a test for both now? Whoa, that's a new one, isn't it? They can't even do the first one, but now we're going to do them both. Yes, CDC has developed a test that will check for A and B type seasonal flu viruses and SARS-CoV-2, the virus that causes COVID. I don't know how much more fraudulent you can make a statement than that right there relative to this subject matter. SARS-CoV-2 isn't even proven. We don't even know its origins. We don't know that it's more than an implicated presumption. That we don't know how it's even causative or infectious. We're now having evidence that it only infects monkey kidneys. Oh, isn't that the same stuff they put in your vaccines before, too? Monkey kidneys? I wonder why it responds to that. And then they got to kill the kidney with chemicals for it to infest it. So maybe your health has something to do with keeping this stuff away, you think? Keep your body from being toxic. Anyway, go over here. This is the virus that causes COVID. No causation, no certification at all anywhere across the world. Anyway, moving on. This test, folks, you got to understand what the deception in those two words is just phenomenal. Will be used by the United States Public Health Laboratories. Testing for these viruses at the same time will give public health officials important information about how flu and COVID-19 are spreading and what prevention steps should be taken. The test will also help public health laboratories save time and testing materials and to possibly return test results faster. The Food and Drug Administration has given CDC an emergency use authorization for this new test. Initial test kits were sent to the public health laboratories in early August 2020. CDC will continue to manufacture these kits. More information is available at this link. We won't go there quite yet. I need to read the next paragraph. Then we'll go to that link. Will the new test that detects both flu and COVID replace other tests? No. This new test is designed for use at CDC-supported public health laboratories at state and local levels, where it will supplement and streamline surveillance for flu and COVID-19. The use of this specialized test will be focused on public health surveillance efforts and will not replace COVID-19 tests currently used in commercial laboratories, hospitals, clinics, and other healthcare settings. CDC's first viral test for SARS-CoV-2, the CDC 2019 nCoV real-time RT-PCR diagnostic panel, will still be available for qualified laboratories to order through the International Reagent Resource, IRR, external icon. The new multi-assay can also be ordered through the IRR. Check the IRR website for details. Wait a minute, I thought it was a test. No, it's a multiplex assay. Interesting. Sounds like a cover your assay here. Let's go look. Information for laboratories about coronavirus 19 is where we go to the link. The CDC influenza SARS-CoV-2 flu SC2 multiplex assay is a real-time reverse transcriptase polymerase chain reaction RT-PCR test that detects and differentiates RNA from SARS-CoV-2, influenza A virus, and influenza B virus in upper or lower respiratory risk specimens. The assay provides a sensitive nucleic acid-based diagnostic tool for evaluation of specimens from patients in the acute phase of infection. Acute phase of infection. Damn, you're finished reading right there. I almost bust up. This is like a big joke, folks. I don't know. I was laughing. I know. It's kind of hard to figure how I could be doing that. This is a joke. This is a laughable condition. You see, as I told you, antigens, immune response, predicts PCR. It's the only thing they've got. PCR is not a test. It's a research technique. When they're working with what they think, what they believe, what they consider purified strains, one, the one that they're working of which they amplify to try and get more of it from lesser amounts from places they can't get too much to make it more. This has nothing to do with the clinical setting. Remember the IRR. Remember what they're saying here. This is just a sophisticated multiple multiplex assay. It's not a test. They're going to give you an instruction manual, just like they referred to the last diagnostic panel that I've been talking about, where I finally realized, together with the serology tested page admission, that they had no test, they were making it, that when we focused on PCR, that's all they had. Then we find out that there's this plaque assay. They don't even do that assay. Again, an assay, not a test. So they give it a name, they call it a test. It's like climate change is about weather, right? No, it's not. Resets are about resetting. No, it's not. If you think that the words they use is what they're talking about, you're missing it. So they admit this is a PCR test. The PCR test cannot identify, as far as the first diagnostic panel instructions, cannot identify. Let's go to this one. Okay, let's move on. CDC influenza SARS-CoV-2 flu SC2 multiplex assay for emergency use only instruction paper. Do you think I read this whole thing, folks? Just like I told you before, so I go through a lot of information. I've got to look for the nugget. If I find a nugget that's fatal, that's all I really need to do. And that's what I did here, and hopefully you'll agree with me that we don't have much more to read than right here. The influenza SARS-CoV-2 flu SC2 multiplex assay is a real-time PCR multiplexed test intended for simultaneous qualitative detection and differentiation of SARS-CoV-2 influenza A, influenza B, virus nucleic acid, and up, blah, 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 on and on and on. The SARS, let's move on. SARS, so you know, that's what we're talking about. The SARS-CoV-2 flu SC2 multiplex assay and intended for use in the detection and differentiation of SARS, blah, blah, blah. Positive results are indicative of active infection, but do not rule out bacterial infection or co-infection with other viruses. Can I stop reading again? Can I please, folks? Can I stop reading again? Positive results are indicative of active infection, but do not rule out bacterial infection or co-infection with other viruses. Clinical correlation with patient history and other diagnostic information is necessary to determine patient infection status. The agent detected may not be the definite cause of disease. The agent detected may not be the definite cause of disease. Laboratories within the United States and its territories, well, that's none of your states, unless there's 57 states, are required to report to all SARS-CoV-2 positive results to the appropriate public health authorities. How are they going to do that? They just said in two places that it won't. Then they do the cover your assay right here. Negative flu multiplex assays do not preclude SARS-CoV-2, influenza A, or influenza B, and should not be used as a sole basis for diagnosis. And then negative results obtained for individuals who are not exhibiting clinical symptoms, signs and symptoms associated with respiratory viral infection at the time of the specimen collection should be interpreted with a particular caution. Now, you're going to find out when you go down and read further, the specimen collection is very specific. There's three ways they can mess this up just in collecting what it is. Secondly, they're pulling from the garbage can still. Thirdly, they can't determine the cause, and they can't even differentiate A from B. A, if B is also involved, and then they say SARS-CoV-2, but remember, we don't have the isolates. Anyway, so what do we got? We have a PCR test that can't do this thing that they've been saying as a test. It's a research technique. Now, what shocked me a bit was that they have some isolates, even though they've said that they don't. So that got me going a little bit. But we have a problem, don't we? Because they said they could actually do this locally. They can do this everywhere. And that can't be, by definition, the PCR test as it was applied. So that they're misapplying the PCR. Why? Because it's research and not clinical. We have the limitations. I went to the limitations. You can go find the limitations. I went to the limitations. The limitations repeated what it said up on top here, that it can't identify this stuff. And that's all I read about the document. Well, I'm sorry, I can't say that. I went down to see where there's interferences that they tried to test in through. You can get into all that. But the point is that they can't test for what they're looking for in the wild. They're just saying that they can. They reference the China Wuhan thing. Here's where I have now a link to that, one of the beginning origins of this, and let me just read one of the paragraphs farther down. Although our study, this is now the FDA is promoting this through that panel assay instruction, that this came from China. This is what that original study said. Although our study does not fulfill Koch's postulates, our analysis provide evidence implicating 2019 nCoV in the Wuhan outbreak. So they did not use science, and by implication, they made a declaration to the public of presumptive cause. Then they point to that they used the detection of IgM, capital M, and Ig, capital G antiviral antibodies in the serum samples. That had to be PCR. There is no test, right? There's no test. That's not a test. We heard by the limitations, it can't be. It doesn't identify what's causing the immune response, just that you have the antigen, antibody, or whatever they've now tailored this to look at. They did reference they had some isolates. Did shock me. I don't fully understand that, but let me point out something about this. The BEIE resource repository, which they reference on the IRR, explains that if information for researchers requesting SARS-CoV-2 from BEI resources, which are a monstrous list from 3 or 4 so-called samples of sources of SARS-CoV-2. So those were not pure samples. Remember the modeling that goes on. Remember the cut and paste that goes on. But most importantly, you're going to read right at the top of this. Is the PCR test? It is a research tool. It's not a clinical tool. If you listen to what I said, they said that these tests have to be done with clinical observations. That sounded no different than the HIV test, quote, test. They have no test for HIV. That was another scam about HIV. Remember, Fauci is the beginning of this HIV nonsense we're seeing and living through today that's been expanded in this endless chain of emerging diseases. But let's read the very top of this BEI resources from where they get these isolates. Let's say they exist. Let's say they're valid. They're pure. Does it mean that what you're testing from someone in a specimen is the same? No, they can't see any of this stuff because it's only looking for reactions, which apparently don't actually affect human tissue. The BEI resource repository is a central repository that supplies organisms and reagents to the broad community of microbiology and infectious disease researchers. Materials are available through an online catalog. This is not available to other than researchers, or not supposed to be used by other than researchers, was to me the proof consistent with the PCR that they only provide this for research, that to use it outside is an extension of outside of the authority of the test, which is not a test. They don't even call it a test now. They call it an assay. Cover your assay, and you got it, I suppose, with your limitations. I guess you're covered. CDC says it has a test. They call it an assay. And it's got all the same limitations of PCR, and in fact, it is a PCR. And then I want to bring this over into Twitter that was said a while back, Celia Ingrid Farber, I think she might even be a doctor. I don't know. I don't keep track. Interesting things that come out periodically. Responding to someone regarding these PCR testing, she as well says, what convinces you there is a virus that is infecting people as opposed to a PCR test that alights on RNA fragments of no particular significance? And if you read the assay panel, that's what you're going to see. It does the same thing as the first PCR. There's no distinction difference. There is nothing. In fact, they tell you one of the limitations is if you have both A and B, and they explain there's a difference for children and adults between the two as well, that if you have B, they're not going to be able to see A very well. Well, if they can't have, they weren't able to see SARS-CoV-2 because they had no isolates before, what were they looking at but the flu? And they couldn't tell if it was A. They could probably see B, but it's not going to say B. It's going to say it responds to an antigen, an immune response. And so I wanted to offer this as well. I see this going through a lot. Because you get into this dialogue and my opinion, that data, this, that, and the other. You know, my comment to the Twitter sphere, just threw it out there. I hope people read it. Folks, please, there is no survival rate to something there is no test for. You've been programmed to admit the infectious agent has been identified despite universal lack of certified proof that no novel cause for flu-like symptoms is proven by any jurisdiction globally. So as soon as you get into saying and discussing the survival rate, you agree there's an infectious agent. I don't care what name you put on it, but the most important part is that communicable part. And so by us doing that, I look at this as evidence of our failure to critically think and to really keep an isolation on what was supposed to happen. Most importantly, we never went to our law. We never looked at the obligation on the officials and required that they produce the evidence for the thing they claim they're trying to protect us all for. And as you'll hear from Clint Richardson's production and presentation, that's all made up, as I've told you. I've told you this is going to be a problem. They're making this stuff up. Now again, it's the self-inflicted wound. However, what words are said, you can go to their documents. A lot of people don't like to read it. I've been explaining this stuff for years. And so it's right before us to see. We're going to see emerging diseases that are just tests to see how you're going to respond. You're the guinea pig. And the way I think we can start to stop it is to get to the local officials and require that they do what the statutes say to act as a buffer, to require they produce the infectious agent. The ulterior motive I see of which is to be able to identify whether or not it was man-made, because then there's a company you can go after and shut them down and maybe get rid of them. They become a bioterrorist at that point. Right now, we don't have that awareness in us. No, we're worried about complaining to the next guy how a mask's not supposed to be worn. And you're going to miss how they're going to take you out in the future. And it's getting worse. And they're setting you up for the technologist to take care of you in the future. You're seeing the military moving right directly with that without any scruple at all to really protect you at a bit. I don't even know what the heck this whole system is really doing then. And we're not insisting any different. Thank you, Grimner, for what you do at reallibertymedia.com. I hope you folks step up and help protect yourself. And Jules over at UCY.TV, thank you very much. The Ghost in the Machine and Shali over there, I think an hour before me, 2 hours before me. Appreciate that you allow us to do all this and Sound Minds and Normalization Ignorance and all you people at BitChute and Walrus and Minds. Appreciate all the... We haven't gotten much action after the trumpet, but thank you for all your favorites, whatever you're reminding and things like that. I'll be with you next week. Tech Diffs, or nature willing.
Well, that's another lesson. I hope with today's information you can take it to those that misbehave. From behind the woodshed, leaving his mark on the beast, this is Hal Anthony. Till next time, Journey with Purpose.
Up a can of whoop-ass feels like.
Son, it's
just open a whole case of Wolfpath.